Accession number 9364, Reel 8.
Mr. Bessel, Reel 8.
We came back from Russia and we weren't very favourably accepted. I remember distinctly looking at Captain Burton's face. He had a bullet through his head. And it was pale, not a resemblance of camouflage at all. And I could cry when I think about it now. This man was a gallant officer. And here he was dead, without a blacking on his face, which he should have had. I didn't go with him, simply because he didn't tell me to go. I would have gone. But I'd probably been killed too. We're in this vast Russian forest, a 1,000-mile forest, if you can imagine it. And only intersected by little villages, which I've already said. When I think of this, I could cry. When I think this poor devil tried to lead an attack with a white face that was his brains blown out and the wall of blue sheet, and I had him, and I thought, oh God Almighty.
Were you told to camouflage your faces when you were in the forest?
No, they were daft as coots. They could have been dafter. You play the band and beat the drum, and somebody said, here we come, we're going to capture you. Because we're, mind you, the sheer impudence of it, like the Light Brigade, when you think of it, somebody was daft there. When I tell you, not with any disloyalty, I'm loyal enough to this country, loyal enough to the Marines. Dad and I served nearly 60 years consecutively, pretty well. But the stupidity of it, when you think that you expect men, when I went to Antwerp, which I did later, and saw the graves of the Marines who tried to stop a German army, a few hundred of them, and poor Dave Gandy bringing them out by getting in behind the railway driver and saying, go on, drive, get out of there, I would cry. Because of the stupidity I can't. When I tell you there were, which I have done, there were hundreds of chaps over the period of service that I know were brilliant. And they were corporals. Brilliant people. One chap was a colour sergeant, he was entitled to a 7-gun salute by the Admiral. Wore a plume in his head. Imagine. This man was brilliant enough. My gunner instructor was brilliant. He was Lord Mayor of Stepney, Justice of the Peace, you know. Tony Mash said to him, what were you doing outside? He was called up for the war, you see. And said, what were you doing outside? He said, I was Lord Mayor of Stepney, sir, Justice of the Peace. And old Tony Mash went round behind him to get your hair cut. There was no one greater. We are the greatest. It's amazing, really. Anyway, come back to what I was going to talk about. The bands. The bands were doing great service. Dame Clara Barton in the First World War was Vera Lynn. She sang in the opera house after Gallipoli. And brought the house down. Not that I was there, because I was only 14. But she was gorgeous, a great singer, a real great singer, greater than Vera Lynn, in my opinion. Though Vera Lynn was the ideal for the job. Anyway, our bands used to go to Netley and France. Frequently they'd leave us to the whistle pipe band, or we were fife players, we played the fife. Indeed, we had a bagpipe, we used to march from the church if necessary, because the band would be away. Lifting the morale of the troops, which is essential. God knows, no one could have been more stupid than the generals. Passchendaele was, you know all about this, you know more than I do. The only successful general during the First World War was an RE, who blew everything timed and chronologically in order so that his attack was planned brilliantly. According to the First World War.
When did you visit Netley?
Lots of times.
After you got back from Russia?
No, I didn't. I want to talk about Netley because I think it's in your pattern. Netley was the only hospital in Europe, the biggest hospital in Europe, and it was had its own railway station. You know this. And coming back into the railway station, you would come in by a blackout, little blue lights shone, eerie to say the least. And you pulled up alongside of this great subterranean passage which ran down to the operating table. This must have been terror to the poor chaps who went down there. There you are, wounded, went to get your leg taken off, and you go down to this blooming eerie blue lights into a blazing great operating place. Like Dante's Inferno, I would suggest. It really was something. I loved Netley to a great measure. Netley has in it, which you perhaps wouldn't know, God knows, a great YMCA given by Canada to Britain, to us. And in this great, in this great YMCA, it was all wood, and they had wood from every part of the British Empire in it, given us by Canada. Gradually sinking into wreck now, probably is a wreck, may have even been pulled down. But it was historic. When they pulled the wing of Netley Band down, underneath, left by Queen Victoria, they had golden sovereigns and that, the coins of the realm of that time, plus the BC and all the medals instituted by the Queen. Of course, she went in there and Nightingale, Florence Nightingale, had something to do with it, though she was a bit of a bolshie. You're a gallant woman, a great character. told the generals, we'll need us, you'll need us, she said. And the generals said, oh, madam, you get in the back line, we don't want you, you get out of it. But Florence Nightingale was the one that really told the generals how daft they were, if that was possible. You had to be a bit of a psychologist to even tell them how daft they were. But they were daft. Cardigan and Co. were mugs. How do you get medals for sending men to die? Why not give medals like Wellington, as I said, never lost a gun?
When was it that you visited Netley then?
Lots of times. I've been...
During the First World War?
No. It must have been a great... Because the great buildings, Netley, beside the hospital itself, you know, and the wings were a quarter of a mile long, and I went there when I left. I joined the gas company when I left the Marines. And my neighbour across the road says, a job, if you'd like, to go with the army as a meter reader. And as such, I used to visit Netley with Spike, my mate, who had the DSO. Spike was a meter reader, AXAB or something. I used to take him there by car, because I could drive, Spike couldn't. And I went into these things being so interested. The graveyards, with all the black and yellow marks on, depicting the fact that they were Belgians from Namur and the forts of Brussels and that. And to go ashore and see lines of young Marines. We had buglers captured by... And the German general said to one of our young buglers, which I was, a little bit senior to me, he must have been six months older or so, perhaps a year. And they captured him, and they said, we're not interested in you, like, you know, you're just rubbish. You're one of the mugs. Kearns, his name was.
What happened to him?
He died, like everybody else. We were all going to die, so... Kearns was quite nice. He was not like it was. Guttridge also was another one captured. Told me how he used to, during the war, he would say to his German guards, if you let me do so and so, I'll give you a bar of chocolate. And they used to get this stuff come from England, you know, these hospital parcels, of which some were restricted, some were given, so I suppose, I don't know, you had. With, you must realise this, the awful anxiety that takes place when you're not quite sure whether you're going to be the prisoner tomorrow and you're the governor today. And this must have been with this chap that Guttridge had. Guttridge used to say, you've got a wife and two kids, I could give you a bar of chocolate and I want to walk downtown. And this chap used to say, well, fair enough, give us the chocolate and I want my kids to have a bar of chocolate. They were terribly restricted because of the the blockade by the fleet. And of course, latterly, the Americans won the war with mines.
When you visited Netley, did you see soldiers, wounded soldiers?
No, dear. It was afterwards. This is my picture. I know.
Was it empty then, the hospital?
Yes. It became empty. It had been empty about many years, I can't tell you, quite a number, maybe 12 years, maybe more than that, 14, 20 years perhaps. But what I want to picture to you, in interest, is to get you the picture of this.
Could you describe the buildings to me then?
Yes, like all hospitals, or all prisons and hospitals, everything goes from the wings. You've got wings and the control from the middle. You're able to look down all the corridors. It's three-story high, I think. It wasn't suitable for a big factory. The hospital, the run-in by train in there, they had a signal box and all that, you know, a platform. You wouldn't have seen it, because you are a young girl. After all, I'm an old man. But you could do a driving test in Netley Hospital. It's so big, the grounds are so big, and the graveyard is kept beautifully. Got its section of Belgians, like they've got their section of Marines in Antwerp. I did want to give you this picture of Netley as I see it, with the, you know, that was where they discovered a cure for gangrene, and do you know why it was? Because they were torpedoed in the channel, and these poor devils were sunk in salt water for maybe 24 hours, maybe a week, I don't know. When they brought them back to Netley, they said, but these chaps are not so bad as they ought to be, according to your report. And they realised that salt is a great cure for gangrene. Well, not a cure, but it's great help. And this Netley, I can always picture Victoria with all the empire and all this, and it faces the Solent, you know, like a great edifice, looking at the Solent proudly, but its skirts, you know. And I can see it facing, and as the troop ships came in with wounded, and Dad's chum died in Malta of fever when he was there as a bugler. He came out afterwards, many years, and saw his chum's grave. Harding. Could he see Harding's grave? I said, yes, sure you can. We go and see. He took me to it in Rickardsley, and I can imagine Dad, he was a bugler, they suffered considerably. He told me he was instrumental in firing a 16-inch gun. I mustn't tread on his platform. I'm trying to give you an overall picture because I think it's interesting. Anyway, our bands used to get in and play all the military. Can you imagine the military bands? The staff of, shall I say, 1,000 staff. All the people to do with the heating and the warming of the place and the keeping of it clean. Even the newspapers being brought into the wounded and that kind of thing. A great place, enormous grounds. They've never sold it, you know, as far as I'm aware. They couldn't sell it to an engineering firm or anything. Would have made a gorgeous holiday camp.
Was it just British soldiers there, or did they have German soldiers?
Oh, no. The Americans, more or less, took it over. We had Hasler here, which was also one of the largest hospitals in Europe, possibly the largest, after Netley. And older than Netley considerably. Netley was Florence Nightingale, Queen Victoria's orbit. But
what was Hasler?
Hasler, 1753.
Was that just a naval hospital?
That was naval, yes. And this is what I was talking about Grandad to you. I wanted to, so much to tell you. He was a seaman. He was a gentleman. Trelevin, Cornish, came up here, put the engine in the first boat that ever, so he tells me, put ever crossed the harbour here. That's the first. Do you know that Gosport had the railway before Portsmouth did? This little place? Anyway, he told me he earned this £200, 200 guineas, golden guineas, in this harbour in an evening. I said, well, what are you doing in bum boating? He said. Well, they, all these boatsmen had their own wherries, or boats. And apparently he had his wherry and they used to go out with all these things that the sailors would want. When you realise that HMS Asia would have had nearly 3,000 men on board, nearly 3,000 men, 2,005, shall I say, the conservative estimate, near enough 3,000. HMS Excellent, that's where the gunnery school is now, would also have had 2,000, because they had no machinery and it was just, you know, they could, but those strong dynamics. And Dad said that you could hear them singing like on radio, like would-be radio, singing sea shanties all around the harbour. And Grandad earned this money. He also, every bone in his hands was broken with bare fist fighting. His sweetheart lived in where Camper and Nicholson's is now. That was called the Ship Inn. As I say, one street had all pubs. Grandad, they took him one day to London. They said, you're a great skittle player. He was. And of course, we've got to realise that men were so tiny compared with what they are today. And no doubt about it. We're in the great step, as sure as God made little apples. And they took him to London and they said, we've got the farmer's boy here to play your local champion. So, fair enough. I said, he said, I knew there was going to be trouble. I said, why? He said, they'd started betting in pennies. He said, and then they started betting in sixpences. And that was going to cause trouble. Well, Grandad didn't bet a farthing. These wide boys had taken him up there to play skittles and get money. Which, of course, and about 3 years afterwards, he was bringing one of the boats across from Portsmouth to Gosport, and he saw a chap down on the forecastle, and he thought, oh, I know that face somewhere. So he thought, well, when I secure the boat, I'll go down and catch him. So he went down, and he said, do I remember you somewhere? Yeah, he said, you ought to remember me, Governor. Why, he said, do you remember playing me skittles in London? I lost every penny I had, he said, and I was caught ringing the changes, and I've been in jail for 3 years. And Grandad said, well, I didn't bet a penny on it. And he was good. Grandad was fierce as hell. And he probably gave him something to make up.
What exactly was bum boating?
I'd go round and say, do you want a 90 for your wife? You know, 10 bob, a couple of quid, whatever it was. They'd say, yeah, so load a basket down, send you load a basket, put a 90 in, put the money in, and vice versa.
So they'd sail round the boats, yeah, the ships, in little boats?
The point I'm making, dear, is that there were so many people in the harbour, and Gosport would have been restricted.
When would this be?
150 years ago, I suppose, 200 years ago, 150 years ago, shall we say, the ruckus. Grandad died in 1924, something about there. Because this is what made me bring it up. He's in that orbit where I watched him die. I went and saw him and said, you know, they were sitting there without the gas on, and I put pennies in the gas and lit it for them and took them a whiskey with me last few shillings. And he was a great man, no doubt about it. He said his father's a doctor in Cornwall, but whether or not he was, God knows. We never knew of him, nor did the family. I know Mum, my mother, who was a great character, used to put a shilling a week away, shilling a week. And out of that shilling was built that shop. That shop and the house next door. The house next door was ours. It was the only house this side of of Grove Road. And it would have been getting on to go to the church, which you passed coming in, you could have walked over fields to the stile. And so...
Can we get back to what happened to you when you came home from Russia? You say you left the Marines. How was that?
I didn't leave the Marines. I was going to transfer from a bugler to a private. See? Well...
Why was that?
Well, because everyone did. You wanted promotion. You wouldn't get promotion. There was only one bugler major, one drum major. You couldn't be that unless you wait for somebody to die. And very proficient as well. So I thought, well, I don't know, what shall I do? I'll walk around, I've got to go to the hospital, have this foot done. I looked around for a girl.
What was the matter with your foot?
This hammered toe. They straightened it out. And they broke it and joined it together and made it straight. I've come to the conclusion, dear, that with all great athletes, it's important of the feet. I don't know if you looked at Bud's feet. Next time you see a bare feet, do you watch? And they're big feet, like men's. And the toes are got to be straight so that they get the maximum spring. They say that everybody should work bandy-legged. Well, not bandy-legged, but pigeon-toed. Do you know this?
Had you always had this hammer toe then, or had it...
Yeah, I'd had it for one and a half foot. And they... Imagine, Tweedy Scott and I left Deal. Tweedy Scott with my mate. Tough as they come. Middleweight. And he said, Reg, I'm going to leave the Marines. I said, oh, yeah. He said, yeah. He said, Edna Pook's going to Canada and I'm going to follow her. He was after this Edna Pook. She was a warrant officer's daughter, brother above poor Tweedy. Tweedy was just a private and his dad was a labourer and his mum was up at Fairham. And he said, I'm going to leave. He said, I'm going to go to Canada. I said, all right, you do that, Tweedy, if you want. He said, well, he said, they fell us in and fell us out enough times, he said, and drove me out the wall. He said, I'm going. He'd done 4 years in the Marines. He'd done his Marine training. So, lo and behold, they were offering £20 if you'd go. So he took the £20, went to Canada. And
who was paying the £20, the Canadians or the Marines?
No, Marines. They couldn't get rid of you quick enough. That's why they said you better be operated on. When I went on the second front, they said, fit. I said, yes, sir. Right, next one, fit. Right, next one, but They weren't saying fit anymore. They were saying, is there any flaw in you? We want to get rid of you.
So they sent you to hospital to have your...
Yeah, well, they didn't send me. I volunteered to go because I realised it was my only chance of staying in the Corps. And being his dad had served his time in it, and we were Marine mad, you know. But I want to talk about Tweedy for a few minutes. This you'll find interesting. Oh, they will find interesting too. So Tweedy was middleweight champion of the Marines in his age group, you know, and he was tough and intelligent. He had a motto. His motto was, stop and think. That was his motto. Anyway, he went to Canada. Wow. 40 years afterwards, they said, there's a big Canadian look for you, Rich. I said, no, it was Tweedy. Well, Tweedy happened to get, he went to Canada, and this, I said, did you ever marry Edna Pook? So he said, no. He said, she went off with a bloke who had a big car. That was my lot. What happened to you? He said, well, I went to a factory making tennis rackets, he said, and directly you got up to top money, they didn't want you anymore, and they started a new kid on, and he said, well, that's it. So he joined the Northwest Mounted, and when in the Northwest Mounted, he was helping them with their drill, because he knew all the Marines' drill. And to get the same precision, they used to say, up, one, two, up, one, two. You always counted 1-2 in your mind, and everything came right. And he was teaching them this business in Canada. Well, then he, somehow or other, I suppose things didn't go right. He married an Irish girl, which he said was a great failure. He went into America. Well, he went, got into America in 1929 when the Great Depression was on. And he got the princely sum of $4 a week working for an old woman, chopping wood for her, and let him sleep in the shed. And there was an old man came along, and he said, I'm in the same boat as you. Can I sleep in your shed? And they told this woman, and she said, yeah, you can sleep in the shed. I'll give you $4 for chopping wood. Well, this Tweedy was making an ideal policeman. You know, fit, tough, he had the brains, he had the lot. And this bloke said, oh, he could make a fortune. He said, I'll tell you how. He said, you go on down on the beach and, you know, they're fishing down there for salmon. Get one of them nets or get them to toss out and part, use one. So somehow or other they got this net and then they had to make a boat. So they made this boat with planks of wood, and these planks mustn't have knots in them, because if they did, they would start to leak. So anyway, then they made this contraption. They've been just about half inch freeboard. That's half inch between the water and you. And they paddled it gently out in this thing and caught these salmon, which are so prolific. So many of them, compared with us, they've got so much